Well, hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of South Geek News. I am Donovan.
I am Ben.
This is, I think it's episode 15. We are recording on April 16th, 2025. You know, my daughter is going to be 28 next Wednesday.
I thought she was still 25. Because last I heard, which is probably about 3 years ago, that she was 25.
Yeah. So what have you been doing the last 2 weeks?
You know, this question always kind of catches me off guard, and I can't think of what I have done or have been dealing with. So I actually took a few minutes this morning and wrote down some things.
Oh.
How long do I have?
As long as you want.
Now, the past few days I've been dealing with some slow VMs. I think you and I talked about that.
Yeah.
Haven't fixed it, but I did get it updated enough where the corruption, I guess, is going away and it's staying alive. So that's good. But I do need to move that OS drive to some faster storage so that when it does patch, it'll patch, you know, within 30 minutes.
I can't say I've ever dealt with a server that took as long to do the patches and reboot as the one you described.
They're all fighting for disk IO. So it's just...
And you were patching the server?
The VM.
Okay, yeah, the VM.
Yeah.
So it's running under what, Hyper-V?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're backed on a RAID 5 array of lower disks.
Yeah.
And it's only 4 drives, so it's probably could be better. So I'm probably going to pitch them, throw in some extra SSDs in the box and put the OS drives on there.
Oh, yeah.
Both VMs.
So at 4 drives, you're not even doing RAID 5.
Yeah. I don't need 4. I don't need 5.
Oh, that's
drives.
Right. No. You got to have 3 drives.
Yeah.
Man, it's been so long since I've done RAID 5. I don't do RAID 5 on anything anymore. It's and it's just because I don't use Hyper-V. You know, everything is Linux based, like Proxmox. I do ZFS and all of that. So you don't, yeah, it's got its own way of doing RAID, but I keep my brain's like, yeah, that's right. 3, minimum of 3. not 5, dumbass.
Yep. And I've been playing with surveillance systems. You know, I have these 2 cameras and I've got an extra Hikvision camera, but I'm looking for a recording system. And I've played with 2. I guess they're both open source. One's called Shinobi.
Yep.
And the other's called ZoneMinder.
I've had Shinobi running under a VM and it's, I don't know what you've discovered, but damn, it's configurable.
It's complicated.
It is complicated.
Complicated.
Yeah.
I set it up once and we were doing okay. And I was like, okay, well, this trial machine is not powerful enough. Let's move to a new machine.
Mm-hmm.
So I set it up on a new machine with a better processor and a you know, really old NVIDIA video chip and set up the cameras a different way. Like I let it discover it through ONVIF, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, it found the cameras. We're good. All the recordings are black. So, and I can't get that to match well enough to get a visible recording. It's either black or they're all 0-byte files in the recordings. It's so, you know, dicked around with that for a couple of hours and I gave up. So I went to ZoneMinder and it's not much better. That ZoneMinder sees the cameras. It apparently records them. But the mobile app is shit. So I think I'm going to end up getting the purpose built NVR.
Yeah.
With a well-supported app that I could just connect cameras and go.
You know, I love open source stuff, but sometimes you just have to give up and go, you know what?
I just wanted a fucking camera box. I did not want a 3-month project.
Yeah.
Just wanted some cameras.
I mean, I like the Synology surveillance station, with the exception the mobile app is crap because... And I think I've explained this to you before. If I hear something and I want to bring, and I'm like, oh, I need to look at the camera, it takes 30 seconds for the app to actually log into the Synology NAS before I can even get the camera to pull up. And if I'm logged in, which most of the time I am, or I was, when I go to click on the camera, it would just sit there and it'd give me a good 10, 15 seconds before I got video. And I'm like, well, shit, by that point, whatever it is that I need to look at, it's already gone. So the two cameras that I have three external cameras, but two of them are PoE Amcrest, and one of them is a Wyze battery operated with a solar panel. So two different technologies. The Amcrest, I actually use the Amcrest app on my phone. And as soon as I pop that up, 9 times out of 10, you know, it defaults to like the camera that's in the front of the office. Bam, mm-hmm. I can see immediately what's there. On occasion for something, and I may just need to reboot the cameras, I may get a black screen for a couple of seconds and then it'll finally come up. But that's what I've started doing. I've done that for a couple of years now. I just gave up on the Synology app and went with the Amcrest Live View app. And it doesn't, now that app doesn't do anything as far as recording. The video is still being recorded by the surveillance station on the Synology. And you've seen it. There's a computer sitting as I point over to my left over here for audio listeners. But there's a monitor over there and there's a computer. And that's all it does is it just runs that software, which you can do it with the web as well. But I just like, if there's an app, a lot of times I like to just use the app because the apps usually seem to work better than the web experience for the most part.
Yeah.
But I don't know. All I can do is wish you well. What I'd love to be able to afford is Ubiquiti NVRs and Ubiquiti cameras. But I may be white, but I'm not rich.
You know, Lorex has a pretty good setup.
Yeah.
4K cameras and all of that. I think you can get a 12 or 16 camera set with a NVR for, you know, it's a chunk of change, but
mm-hmm.
it's not like a monthly commitment. It's like $1,600, I think, for the 4K cameras and a recorder.
Yeah, my liquor store client uses, he put in Lorex about 2-3 years ago. Yeah, I'm looking at them on Amazon right now. So this is 4K, 8 megapixel, 16 camera capable, wired or fusion Wi-Fi, 4 terabyte PoE NVR system with 12 IP dome cameras. Color night vision, smart motion detection, person/vehicle, IP67, listen in audio. Buying options are, lowest is $1,289.99 from a company called Surveillance Depot. But the majority of people are trying to sell this thing for $1,650. Oh, yeah. I don't think I need 12 cameras, though.
You can always find a place for a camera.
Well, the fact that their PoE is, their IP camera. So I'm going to presume their PoE, of course, because I would imagine this thing supplies power to them. It would have to work that way, or it should work that way. Let's put it that way.
Now, what I can't find out is how, I think the cameras, it's designed so the cameras connect directly to the recorder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this provides PoE and all that. But I've got a gate and I want two cameras out there. I'm not running two cables. I'm actually just going to put a wireless bridge in and a little PoE switch out there and all that. What I need to know is, can I connect those two on one link and just reference them by IP, or will it find it on one port? Will it find both cameras?
I would think so.
I can't find anything that, well, I'm not dropping $1,600 if I can't know before. So.
No, I mean, I agree. But as far as my understanding is that's, what's in those boxes is just PoE, normal PoE switches.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So
I can't think it would be any more complicated.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, because they're all IP. Now, if it was a proprietary type thing, I'd say, yeah, that would be an issue. But I think what you're wanting to do would be feasible.
And this isn't critical. So, it'll probably be 5 years before I get it all done.
That's the way I look at things. It's like, well, this is on my 5 to 10 year roadmap, which means I may or may not be here either physically or living in this location in 5 to 10 years. Who knows, right? You know, we've always thought about downsizing, but I even went and looked at some land Saturday, and it was a little over an acre for $16,000. And then I saw it, we saw it, and I was like, oh, I know why it's only $16,000. It would take a lot of landscaping to build it up, because the slope coming off the road, you probably would grade down about 6 to 8 feet before you hit the bottom. That thing would fill up with water. Even though, according to everything I was looking at on realtor.com, it was like, yeah, this is not in a flood zone. Like, well, apparently y'all haven't been out there standing in the middle of it, because there were literal muddy car tracks in the middle of the property where somebody had gone down in there. So
16,000 an acre.
Well, it was like 1.2 or something. So yeah, 16. They started out listing it for 30.
Is this in Tiff County?
Yeah. Which that shouldn't surprise you. Land in Tiff County is, they think it's made out of gold pressed latinum.
Oh yeah. It's all oil fields over here.
Yeah. I mean, coming from Ben Hill County, I was always warned about that. It's like, yeah, land over in Ben Hill County maxes at the time, this was several years ago, maxes out at about $5,000 an acre. I come over here and it was like, ah, oh, that's 10 or 15 over here. Like, holy shit. No.
Yeah. I don't know why. Tiff County, anything in Tiff County is not a destination.
I mean, it's I-75, but
meh. Yeah. It passes right through. It does not stop here.
Yeah, that's true. What else? What else? What else happened? What else did you do?
Been doing landscaping.
Oh, speaking of landscaping, huh?
Yeah. Tearing stuff out that's been neglected and growing weeds, and put in a weed barrier and mulch and borders and all that, trying to make the backyard livable.
I gotcha.
And I have a client. I had to go run some drops last week. He's bought a building, like, I don't know, probably 8 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And we wired that building, but it used to be a furniture store. And it's two big areas. And then on the end of those two areas, there's a warehouse, like a metal building that's basically attached to the end of this retail structure. Mm-hmm. So he was in one space and he was renting this middle part. And that didn't work out, and his business grew, so he's kind of spilled over into that middle part, and now he's using the warehouse, the metal building part. He calls it the warehouse. Mm. But inside there, he's now building a living quarters, I guess, for contractors who have to come and stay for a week or two at a time when they're, I don't know, doing big jobs.
Interesting.
So I've just been calling it the warehouse condo. Because it's one room and a bathroom, and that's it.
And you had to run drops in there?
Yeah. Because, you know, they're going to have a TV. We're going to have some internet.
Yeah. Got to get some of that sweet, sweet internet.
Mm-hmm. So I've got so above it, it's like a loft on top. I've got to put a weatherproof sort of box in there to put a switch and a patch panel.
Mm.
So that'll be interesting. Something I've never done.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and a funny story. Well, not story, but I went to pick up my son from soccer practice, and I've been playing, just letting Spotify go mm-hmm. with whatever. So it started playing a song called Throw Ass. and I'll be honest, that is the lyrics also.
Throw ass.
Throw ass. It's, I didn't know what it was saying until I looked at the song title, and it's just throw ass. No idea. It's just an EDM song with no meaning.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah. My highlight of the day, throw ass.
Hey, we'll get back to some more tech news in just a minute, but for right now, we've got to pay some bills. We'll be right back. I can't say that anything's really been exciting around here. Went and looked at that land. the Explorer has a transmission problem. That's always fun. Mm-hmm. I may have mentioned last time about the battery. I don't know, but Friday before last, Oriana and I went to pick up groceries like we normally do. And I go to put the Explorer in reverse and it doesn't move. And I'm like, oh no. And then it goes ka-thunk. And I'm like, okay. So I did a little bit of research and come to find out this is a 2003 Ford Explorer. And it seems like the 2003 to 2008-ish transmissions that they put in those vehicles at some point developed this problem, usually around about 60 to 85,000 miles. This one, even though it's the age that it is, only has 77,000 miles on it. Huh? But apparently it's starting to develop this issue. And it seems it's related to, these are sealed transmissions. You cannot check the transmission fluid in these. You cannot. Yeah. Yes. First vehicle I ever heard of. And of course we've had it since 03 and I didn't realize it, but yeah, a couple of years ago I was going, okay, I'm checking the oil. I'm going to check the, wait a minute, where's the transmission check? And I kept looking and I kept looking. And I finally looked it up and it's like, the 2003 Ford Explorer has a sealed transmission. You do not replace the transmission fluid. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, it uses a synthetic transmission fluid, but apparently Ford screwed up and put the wrong type in some of these transmissions. It's like an R55S something or another type of transmission. And eventually there's an additive that they have to put in it, and it you know, eventually is supposed to solve the problem. But when this particular issue starts happening, pretty much you have to drop the bottom off the transmission pan. Then you have to remove the solenoid package or whatever it's called. And there's a valve body that apparently is the issue. And so you can replace the valve body. Then they have to put transmission fluid back in it. However you do that. And I'm like, oh, great. So, and it's not that it necessarily is supposed to strand you. It's just, if you're going forward, you never have a problem. And it only seems to be once the engine and transmission warm up. Then you go to put it in reverse and it'll hesitate and then it'll kick and you can go in reverse. So I was going to carry it in and then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to hold off because I already spent over $2,000 fixing air conditioner and some other issues on that damn thing last year. And I've got a, you know, taxes were yesterday, so they took another $5,500 out of my ass there. So I'm like, we're just going to have to wait a little bit. You know, maybe May. We'll see what it's going to take.
Until then, you just have to wait an extra second to get in reverse.
Yeah. Well, I've been taking the car to get the groceries. And it was so funny. We pulled in Friday and one of the ladies that she's gotten to know us, and she come out and she goes, oh, you're in the car again. And I was like, yeah, the Explorer's giving us a little bit of problem. And as she's getting to the back of the car, I heard her say, yeah, I wish I had a backup. And I'm thinking, wow, what a privileged asshole I feel like now, you know.
She wishes she had
like a backup vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I kind of feel that way sometimes, too. I have 5 cars here. But you know, I'm about to have 4 drivers.
Yeah.
So, yeah. My backup is a 96 Miata.
Yeah, that sounds like a damn price burner. I mean, technically, we have 3 vehicles here. We have my car, we have the Explorer, and we have Tyler's truck. Because Tyler is never planning on taking it, having it hauled out to Seattle. Unless he winds up finding an actual house somewhere, where he'll then need a mode of conveyance that is not train or bus or feet, because he walks pretty much everywhere he can, and then he takes the train or the bus other places. So
I wouldn't take that to Seattle.
What, his truck?
Yeah.
Why not?
I would prefer an all-wheel drive vehicle with some traction control.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's an issue where in Seattle. It'd be on the other side.
Probably right.
It'd be on the other side of the
city.
Yeah, on the other side of the mountain ridge would be a problem. Because that's what I've learned with him being out there. It's like Seattle's on the west side of the mountain ridge, but then it's like he's like Washington seems to be divided into like two parts. The people on the west side of the mountain ridge are different than the people on the east side of the mountain ridge. I was like, okay. And he goes, the weather is too.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, okay.
I could get that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been dealing with. And the other thing was, you know, the little VoIP issue that I ran into. Upgrade. So here's the backstory. So you know that I use 3CX on two of my clients. Mm-hmm. One is really big and one of them is just, you know, an average size. They have a SIP trunk that only has 5 channels. My larger client has a SIP trunk that has 15 channels because they've got like 40 something extensions on it. The other one's got less than 10. So anyway, the larger client hit me up and said, hey, does our phone system support the way it was put to me was basically voice to text. And I said, are you talking about transcribing the voicemails? And they said, yes. And I said, well, we looked at that a couple of years ago and the current version that they were running, the version of 3CX they were running, version 18, had support only through a Google API. So you had to do some menagerie of stuff and get it all set up and et cetera, et cetera. So I said, I can look at it again. I just don't know what that's going to, you know, run you monthly, depending on usage and stuff like that. So they said, yeah, look at it again. So I did some research and all the stuff coming back. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. It now supports OpenAI/Whisper and 3CX has its own built-in beta version of transcription, which is free. But this all requires you to be on version 20. Now, I've been running version 20 for my small, you know, one or two telephone scenario for about a year or so. And I've been holding off on doing these clients because I wasn't comfortable. When V20 first came out, they didn't immediately let everybody know that it was beta. It put it in the release channel and everybody upgraded to it. And then suddenly half the crap didn't work. So a lot of people had to go back, but it's matured. So I took the smaller client and I upgraded them first and made sure that nothing was broken. Everything looked fine. Tested the transcription and I was like, this is good. This works really well. And it's real simple. You just go into the integrations and you go to transcription. You hit the enable, do a drop down. It says 3CX. And you just go to the department setting and say, what do you want this to do? Voicemail or voicemail and recordings? Now, if you want it to do voicemail and call recording, then you have to upgrade to the enterprise version. So anyway, I was like, cool, I'm going to take a chance. Now, keep in mind, I run all of my 3CX instances under Proxmox. So I have backups. If something goes terribly, terribly wrong, I can blow that thing away and restore it from backup and they'll be up and running again in 15 minutes or less. So Sunday, I upgraded the big client, tested all the transcription, went through, made sure everybody had the notification of emails in their for their extensions. Everything was working great. Come Monday morning, I expected to get a call from that. No, nothing. Everything was working great. What I got was an email from the smaller client saying, hey, when I get a call and it goes to my cell phone, there's no number. I'm like, huh?
No caller ID shown.
Yeah, no caller ID was showing on the phone. Yeah. So the way I do with all the clients, I usually create myself an extension on there and then I use the 3CX app on my phone and stuff like that. So anyway, I started testing it. And sure enough, you know, I set up my extension so that I enabled simultaneous ring to mobile and I'd call from my office phone and my cell phone would show up unknown. So then I would test with the larger client and it was working great. And the SIP trunks are with the same company. And I'm like, this makes no sense. All the caller ID settings for both installations were identical. Scratching my brain, racking my brain, cracking my skull open, playing with the gray matter, couldn't figure it out. So I reached out to the basically the guy that's in charge of the NOC and the meta switch and everything at the company. And I said, hey, man, I need some help. And so he starts looking at everything and he can't figure it out on his side. He's like, it just, nothing looks right. I mean, nothing looks wrong. They're all, I said, you know, take each one. And we both did the same thing. You know, he took his settings and the client over here that doesn't have the problem, the client over here that does have the problem, and just kept going line by line by line. Can't find a difference. I did the same thing with 3CX. And so finally, we were talking yesterday and I had called him and we went over some stuff. And so got off the phone. And within about 2 to 5 minutes later, he calls me back and he goes, I got an idea, something that I just noticed that the client that it's working on is this is set for, but over here it's not. He said, but it may disrupt the connection. And I said, well, they're on the phone right now. So he's like, well, we'll do it after five. So this morning I got out here and I tested and caller ID worked. So I emailed him back and I said, hey man, it's working. What'd you do? And it's that thing that I sent you that basically you had to put in that the SIP binding and the IP address. You had to put the IP address that it was coming from in the SIP binding. It was some kind of security thing, which he basically said, there's nothing in the documentation that says that this basically gives it an elevated level of security and trust, which seems to be what it needed. I said, well, now we know. So
put that in your knowledge base.
Yeah. Yeah. So there we go. But that's pretty much been it. Things are kind of slow, which, I mean, as long as things keep getting paid, I don't care. It gives me time to do other things.
Yeah. So I've still got that new site coming up in Warner Robins. And I advise them that we don't need the Cox internet security package.
Yeah.
And we don't need a gateway in the modem. We just need internet access. And so...
just give me an Ethernet handoff. That's all I need.
My client said, we don't need a modem. Just whatever. And I thought, oh, shit, man.
No, I don't need a modem. What?
Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, well, we need a modem, but... And before I could respond, the rep, and she seems great. She's like, okay, you just need, you know, one of these two modems. If you're going with just the 1 gig, you need the Aris SB8200. And if you're going with the 2 gig speed, you need the Hitron.
Never heard of that.
Hitron. I mean, it's just a DOCSIS 3.1 cable modem.
Yeah, never heard of that.
So I was like, well, maybe if we, I don't want to get the Aris and then he decides he wants to go to 2 gig speed.
Yeah.
And the Hitron was about $30 less than the Aris.
So you bought that? I mean, you bought it independently.
I just ordered it from Amazon. Yeah.
Huh.
I didn't want to go, well, we needed a modem. So I just got the modem.
Oh, yeah, it'll do 2.5. But DOCSIS 3. Yeah.
But I don't, you know, we're going with a Sonic Wall. I think it's a TZ370 that only has a gig interface on the WAN. So nobody's going to know.
You and those Sonic Walls, man.
It's a compliance thing.
I guess. I don't get it. But you and I, we've had that conversation. There's nothing a Sonic Wall does that is any more special than a Netgate box does.
You're all correct.
And but the Netgate is actually a certified, you know, from Netgate, the company, not using the CE version of the software on your own box. So,
yeah.
And I mean, the price point is about the same. I'm looking at the price of these 370s. It's about the same. But hey,
I know it's
what you know. I'm an old school Sonic Wall guy. Back in the day, back in the early aughts, that's what we all used.
That's where I got it from, Don. that's what made me start using them.
Oh, I remember.
But it's funny. On Twitter, I keep hearing or reading a bunch of stuff about, you know, Fortinet having severe vulnerabilities, and even Palo Alto networks having some problems, and
yeah,
and never hear about SonicWall having issues.
No, I don't hear anything about SonicWall. I don't hear anything about NetGate, pfSense.
Yeah, but so, if there's a cyber insurance claim, I can document that I've got a valid subscription and everything was up to date and our ducks were in a row. So
do the SonicWalls support WireGuard yet? Do you know if they got a road? If they don't,
not
do they
that
have
I'm
a,
aware of?
Do they have a roadmap that you know of?
No, I've never looked, but
okay.
Yeah, not that I know of.
All right. I figure they probably kind of like Cisco, they all rely on the old, unfortunately slower and outdated IPsec, but it works. So, I mean, if it's not broken, don't fix it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you, WireGuard, there is a significant speed improvement when you, especially now, see, I was using OpenVPN for VPN connectivity for one of the client, and then up until WireGuard became really the big thing over the last couple of years, I was using OpenVPN to tie the two buildings together for this one client. And it worked fine, I mean, for what they needed. But then I started hearing about WireGuard, and Tyler was telling me about it, and he's like, you really need to start looking into this. And then NetGate started supporting it in pfSense. They initially put it in the core software, but it was buggy, so they pulled it out, and now it's just a package, but it's a package that automatically gets installed now. And the speed tests between OpenVPN, IPsec, and WireGuard just smokes the shit out of those other two.
So they're just slicker and less overhead in the
IP
traffic?
Yeah, it's one of these things. If you ever get a chance, you're really curious about the history of WireGuard, some guy just come up with the idea, and it was like, it was almost one of those moments where people were going, why didn't we think of this? You know, it takes a little bit. You have to adjust the way you set it up, and without some other pieces that you have to put together for it to be kind of like a Road Warrior style setup for a VPN is a little hinky, because like, for instance, with OpenVPN, you can set it up so that all you got to do is create a certificate, username, and all this other kind of stuff. You install the software, let's say on a laptop or a phone or whatever, and when they connect, then the OpenVPN server will give you an IP address in the range that you've set up for the OpenVPN server. It'll do DHCP. WireGuard does not support DHCP at all. You have to do it in some other weird way, like PIA, Private Internet Access. They do WireGuard, but they are able to give you an IP address, but they use some other layer to do it. But WireGuard, by its design, was never intended to ever just hand out IP addresses. You have to set up statics between every connection. But once you're done, you're done. Hmm. So I like it. It works.
Well, if it's secure and it's faster, then I don't see a downside.
Yeah. Well, so far I have not seen anything come through CISA or any of those places. No articles or anything that has said any kind of vulnerabilities have been discovered in WireGuard.
No, yeah. They're too busy writing up Adobe articles. I swear every CISA email I see has some new vulnerability found in an Adobe product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. The only Adobe product I use is Audition to edit the audio for these podcasts. I actually come across this for PDFs. It's a software package. It's open source called PDF Gear. You need to try it because it is a kick-ass PDF reader and creator. It does everything that I need that Adobe Acrobat, the paid program, does, but it's free. So PDF Gear. All right. How about we get into some stories now that, you know, we've talked about everything else for the last, what, half hour or so? Hey, we'll get back to some more tech news in just a minute. But for right now, we've got to pay some bills. We'll be right back. All right, I'll start off. We can round robin like we did last time if you want okay. to. All right, first story. I saw this one. I was like, really? Okay. OpenAI considers launching a social network to rival Elon Musk's X, or as you call it, Zitter. OpenAI is exploring the idea of creating its own social media platform to compete with Elon Musk's X, formerly Twitter, and Meta's Instagram, according to a source who spoke with CNBC. The project is in early development and is reportedly inspired by the viral success of OpenAI's latest image generation tool, which allows users to create everything from logos to anime-style portraits. The feature has overloaded OpenAI servers due to its popularity, leading CEO Sam Altman to joke that our GPUs are melting. We talked about that on the last show. Mm-hmm. The viral sharing of AI-generated images, particularly on X, has also fueled speculation about OpenAI wanting more direct control over how its content is shared and consumed. The potential social platform could help OpenAI leverage user-generated content to train its AI models more effectively, giving it a competitive edge in the booming generative AI market. This move would intensify the rivalry between Altman and Musk, who co-founded OpenAI in 2015, but has since launched his own AI company, xAI, and recently, but unsuccessfully, tried to buy OpenAI for $97.4 billion. OpenAI recently closed a $40 billion funding round, which now gives it a massive $300 billion valuation, positioning it as a major player in both AI and potentially social media. What are your thoughts on using, I mean, is there a leap from ChatGPT to a social media platform? I don't know how that would work.
If you wanted to basically build a social media network clone.
Yeah.
To liken the features and things on the other platforms. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be anything good. I think if they were to put in some social features and sort of let it grow organically, as the users kind of demand and see where it goes, feel it out, just like Twitter and Facebook did. I think it would be something that would have a differentiator and it might last. But I think if they try to copy one of those two, it's not going to work because they were well established. But yeah, I mean, they could put some social features in it, mm-hmm. but I don't know. It could get scary if some of the users on the platform were just AI bots. Like from the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't, I'd like to know more about their, about the idea, what they want to accomplish with it.
Yeah. I mean, we
don't need a fucking another social network.
No. And I don't understand what they mean about they want more control over their content. I mean, you put this thing out here and say, hey, everybody use it. Oh, by the way, our GPUs are melting. And then you go, and instead of tightening it down, then it's just like, oh yeah, we've gone from the GPUs being overloaded to, okay, well now we're just going to let everybody do it. And it's okay. I don't understand what you're trying to control here. Yeah. Everybody's going to share their stuff. They share it on Discord. They share it on Twitter, Blue Sky. So I don't know. I have no clue, but
yeah,
I'm with you on that. I don't need another freaking. It's social media network.
Yeah. I haven't bothered with, I've not bothered with TikTok.
Me either.
I've not visited Blue Sky.
I don't check it out as much as I used to.
Instagram is useless to me. Facebook is useless.
Twitter has
become a source of despair.
Yeah. You know what
It's not that it's bad stuff on there. It's just that I keep comparing myself to other people who are doing cool shit.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. The thing is, I like everything. And so the people who are actually doing cool shit have just one interest. They work on the same thing every day. And I don't have that luxury because one day I created an internet service status monitor. And another day I want to go on the road and be a stand-up comic.
Why not?
And other days I just want to sleep.
I think there's more of those days for me than anything else. I just want to sleep. Just
yeah, that's the default.
Yeah, just let me sleep. I'll be honest. I mainly use Instagram to look at the half naked women because that's pretty much all that's in my damn feed most of the time.
I follow a few people on Instagram. Yeah. I got an Instagram account so that I could keep up with what my daughter's putting on there. The back when she was, I don't know, 15. And all I do is post pictures of food, things that I cook. If it looks good, it goes on Instagram.
I don't even post on Instagram.
Well, if you look at all of my posts, it's all food.
I don't even think I follow you on Instagram.
Well, yeah, you can look me up because my username is my that looks tasty.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, God. Okay. All right, guys. Let's see. My that looks, you know, that could be misconstrued. Oh, I see it. Okay.
I guess it could go either way. Yeah.
All right. I'm following.
I probably
you
haven't posted in well over a year.
The last thing I see is this piece of pizza, October 13th, 2024.
Huh?
It's a slice of pizza.
Yeah. It has been rather recent.
Yeah. Killer crust pizza.
where was that?
You posted it? I don't know.
Killer crust. That was probably a soccer weekend. North Georgia.
You're right. Your feed is nothing but food.
There's no other reason to be on Instagram.
Man, I've already eaten and this makes me hungry.
I make good looking stuff.
Wow.
Most of it's my cooking.
Oh, chocolate chip cookies.
I didn't make those.
That reminds me. So Oriana started doing this about 2 years ago now, I think. She'll take a cake mix, but she learned about this recipe because she'll come across recipes and then she's like, I want to try these. So we take cake mix, but instead of making a cake with it, she makes cookies. So I can't remember exactly what it is, but there's one ingredient you don't put in it so that it doesn't, you know, fluff up and air up like you would for a cake. And so she makes these cookies and then they're topped with buttercream icing and they're like cookie sandwiches. So it's got a top and a bottom with the buttercream in the middle. Oh my Lord. When she first made the first batch she made of those, I thought I had died and gone to confection heaven or whatever. I mean, those things were great. And now it's just like, yeah, just make cookies. Matter of fact, she's planning on, we got two boxes of, I think it's strawberry cake mix and buttercream icing. And she's going to make strawberry cookies for Easter, which is coming up this weekend.
Diabetes.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're going to go with a smile.
And without a foot.
Yeah, because it probably got amputated. All right, let's move on. You got the next story?
If I can read, Anthropic's Claude can now read your Gmail. This is an article from TechCrunch. Anthropic has announced that their AI chatbot, Claude, now integrates with Google Workspace, allowing it to access and reference emails in Gmail, calendar events, and Google Docs. That sounds fantastically scary.
Mm-hmm.
This feature is currently in beta and available to subscribers of Anthropic's premium plans. The integration requires administrator approval for multi-user accounts. Claude will provide inline citations when referencing Workspace content and includes strict authentication controls to protect user data. Additionally, Anthropic launched Claude Research, a new feature that performs multiple web searches to generate detailed answers, competing with similar offerings from OpenAI and Google. Well, deep research is several months old.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of weird that they're just coming out with a research thing now.
True.
I don't know, integrating with the Google account, I can see the potential use, but I can also hear the screams in the abyss from what's going to eventually become a great mess for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, I'm backing away from anything Google anymore.
Really?
It's just for my purposes. They're not the company they were in 2001.
Yeah, I've actually started thinking about. Well, I already use Proton for the Tifta Media Works email domain, and I was like, I need a new catch-all email that's not Gmail, that's not company or anything like that. So you'll get a kick mm-hmm. out of this. So today I registered 404mail.me. 404mail.me. I was going to run it on my own IRED mail server here, but I kept fighting with the whole SPF, DKIM, DMARC and all of that. And every time mm-hmm. I'd send emails, Google and even Proton, whenever I was sending to them, was like, you know what? Your stuff's not, this could be a phishing email or something's just not set up quite right. And I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. Why don't I just add this domain to my current Proton? I actually upgraded to a business platform, which cost me, I've been paying $5. Now I'm going to be paying $11, I think, but it lets me do more domains and all. And I'm like, and not that I'm going to need it, but you always need to be prepared. All of that is sitting over in Sweden or Switzerland. So good effing luck if the government ever wants to seize my email on any of those domains, because they're sitting over there.
Yeah, I spun up a new one at brayberg.com just for this. So I'm going to be working through my emails the last 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got that account in 04. Anyway, I'm going to be migrating off, but you know, it's on DreamHost servers. So LA or Virginia or somewhere. And good luck if they want to find out what I've ordered from Duluth Trading Company. The underwear are magic.
They are magic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, for a few bucks a month, you can move it out of the country. Proton is really good. I'll say that. They are really good. And they've got a pretty good app that works on iOS as well. So their web interface has got a lot. It's busy, but you can do a lot with it too. So, you know, if you're afraid of authoritarian government coming after you.
I don't understand the fear. Maybe ignorance is bliss. I'll just say that.
Well, when your sitting president is talking about actually sending U.S. citizens, actual born and bred U.S. citizens here, because they might be criminals. They've done something in their past where they're criminals. And he's talking about deporting them out of the United States to the El Salvadorian prison. Yeah. Ignorance would be bliss.
Well, I don't think he has that power.
We didn't think he had the power of what he's been doing, but he's just been doing it.
Well, you know, I haven't been on Twitter or watched the news in probably 4 weeks. So I'm probably way behind.
Bless your heart.
I don't have anything to hide.
I mean, I don't either, but I am a little bit.
They can have it all. Dick pics and everything.
I can be vocal about this particular regime that's in charge right now. And there's never in my lifetime would have ever thought that there could have been something, you know, short of threatening, you know, the president or whatever, which I don't do, never have said that. But never in my lifetime would I have ever been concerned that something I might have said against one particular party or one person in a particular party or authority could suddenly get the attention of somebody in that regime and go, you know what, let's make their lives a living hell because we can. You know, we used to be a country that had the rule of law. We no longer have that. But anyway, that is part of the reason why I started looking at moving some of my stuff out of the country when it comes to like email and what have you. Now, granted, anybody that I email that their email, if there's a Gmail, You know, you still got the thread, but you can't get the actual, you can't seize the email server sitting in Switzerland or Sweden, you know?
Yeah.
Good fucking luck.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess I'm no one's enemy. So,
I mean, I'm not either. Not right now. I mean, I'm my own worst enemy, but you know, that's a totally different thing.
And you're totally welcome to take your email servers down.
Exactly. I think I will.
In fact, I think you've already seized your email servers.
I did. I seized them. I overseized them. Oh, that was terrible. Moving on. Android 15 has a new requirement that could leave your phone behind. This is an article from ZDNet. According to a confidential GMS requirements document, Android 15 will require devices to have a minimum of 32 gigs of storage, doubling the previous requirement of 16 gigs from Android 13. This applies to both new phones and existing devices seeking to upgrade. And while most modern Android phones come with 128 gig or more storage, this requirement could prevent older or budget phones with 16 gigs or less from running Android 15. Google can enforce this requirement through its Google Mobile Services, which is at GMS licensing, which provides access to essential Google apps and services. The requirement aims to ensure better performance as limited storage can lead to operational issues. Now, I cannot recall the last time that I had a phone that had less than 128 gigs of storage. I mean, the last Android phone that I actually owned was a Pixel 2, and I don't even, I've got it over there. I'd have to fire it back up and just see what its storage capacity is. But when I came back to the Apple ecosystem, my first Apple, my iPhone was an SE, and I'm pretty sure it had 128 gigs, and my 13 had 256. This Pro's got 256. So I can't imagine. I mean, unless we're talking really low tier budget phones, of a smartphone with 16 gigs of storage, that just, you, what can you store? There's four pictures.
I wonder if that 32 gig requirement is of internal storage.
Or not.
Or can you just pop an SD card in and meet the requirement? But I don't know. It's, you know, there are budget devices.
Yeah.
There's probably a ton of manufacturers make really low cost Android devices because software's cheap.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're out there, but they're probably all broken by now because they're made out of silly putty.
Well, Oriana has a budget. She's had two budget phones in her lifetime of having actual smartphones, and they have both been Motorola's. Now, I cannot remember what this last one is that I bought, but I think I bought it maybe 2-3 years ago. And it was somewhere between $200 and $300. She's not one of these type of people that's just got, oh, I got to have a Pixel, I got to have an iPhone or anything like that, because she kind of follows her brother Tyler in the fact that he doesn't like Apple stuff just because of the ecosystem being locked down. He does not like that. He prefers Android.
Okay.
But I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, that's cool. I've integrated too much into the Apple ecosystem. I mean, I've got a watch. If I ditched my phone, my watch would be useless because it does not work with anything but an iPhone. So
yeah, I joined the Apple thing because I just wanted a phone that would work.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to hack it. I didn't have to figure stuff out. It just worked. And for what it's worth, the App Store, they do a pretty good job of weeding out the bullshit.
Yeah.
So if I can install an app from the App Store, I have pretty good confidence that it's not going to hose anything up.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's, it's just going to work. And that's what they've always been known for, is to just work.
I would say that if I didn't have the Mac Mini and I didn't have an iPad and I didn't have a MacBook Air, I could possibly be persuaded to move back over to like a Pixel 9 or a 9A or something like that. But because I have all these devices and they all just integrate and work together, I can't ever foresee me moving away from that. I mean, yeah,
you're not going to match the the fact that I can pick up my phone. If I can't find my Apple TV remote, I can pick up my phone and, mm-hmm. and open the remote app and tell it which Apple TV I want to control, and I'm done.
Yeah.
That will never happen in any other scenario unless Samsung comes up with all this stuff too.
Yeah, I think the only other time I could do that, and it was not phone dependent, was the Roku has an app that you can do that. You can put it on your phone and control like a Roku mm-hmm. TV.
Yeah.
But who in their right mind would want a Roku TV now? So I only have not them because they were inexpensive and I don't even use the Roku side, you know?
Just the display?
Yeah, it's just a display. That's what I want. I've said that before. Just give me a freaking display. I don't need all that smart BS inside the TV because I'm going to either put a Fire Stick or an Apple TV on the thing. Mm. So that's all I need. But monitors are too expensive. Actual, you know, to get a 42-inch actual, quote, monitor seems like it's like 1.5 to 2 times the price of, oh, here's a television the same size.
Oh, it's more than that. It's like, what, 42-inch TVs now, $150, $200?
Well, they were before the tariffs, but we don't know now. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't shop anymore. But I was looking at some LG commercial displays. They're about $1,200 a piece, 42, 43-inch.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm looking for a client because they keep buying TVs. And those things are on 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, so I might just talk them into doing that.
Insignia 42-inch television for $139.99. But the LG 42-inch class OLED EV C4 series smart TV 4K processor flat screen with magic remote AI powered with Alexa built in, baby, $866.
What size did you say that was?
42.
Huh. It's got 100. Must be a really good picture.
Yeah, it's got 120 hertz refresh rate. It's 4K. Because that $140 one was a 1080p. I wasn't specifically looking for 4K. Samsung's got a 4K 43-inch for $379.99, but it's 60 hertz, which I'm fine with because I turn all that extra hertz crap off. That smoothing of the motion and all makes me sick.
Yeah, it does. It takes the magic out of some of the films.
Yep, it does. I remember I was sitting at my in-laws many years ago. They had, and I'm like, what is wrong with this television? I mean, I literally was getting motion sickness, like seasickness sitting on the couch. And it's because they had that, by default, it just had that 120 hertz stuff enabled on it. And I was like, yeah, I can't watch TV like this.
Yeah, I was at my parents' house and watching a movie, or they had something on that I'd seen before. And I thought, this looks different.
Yeah.
And I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. Next story.
Microsoft warns that anyone who deleted a mysterious folder that appeared after the latest Windows update must take action to put it back. This is hilarious.
It is.
It's from Tech Radar. Recent Windows 11 24 H2 April 25 update created a mysterious empty folder called inetpub on users' systems drives. While some initially suggested deleting this seemingly useless folder, Microsoft has now warned against its removal. The folder is actually part of a security fix for a vulnerability that could allow local attackers, to access or modify files improperly, even if users don't use internet information services. Do you say IIS or 2S?
2S.
I feel like there's a camp for people. I just say IIS, and I don't know why.
It's probably the folder needs. Go ahead.
The folder needs to remain in place for the security patch to work properly. Users who already deleted the folder need to restore it by enabling Internet Information Services through Windows features in the control panel.
Yeah, all I wanted to say is when you talk about the two different camps, it's probably the same type of camp of the people that pronounce it SQL versus SQL.
Yeah.
If you pronounce it SQL, you're wrong.
Yeah. Okay, good. I think we might have had to divorce if you call it SQL.
Yeah. Or MySQL, people call it MySQL. And I just look, what?
I just, you lazy fuck. It's like two more syllables, idiot.
Oh, you're right, though. This is hilarious. I was reading into this a little bit more. Okay, number one, anybody that has ever done anything with Internet Information Services, 2S or IIS, whatever. Yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah. The INET pub folder is where everything gets published.
Yeah, that's your default web root.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw some of the comments about this, and it's like, what kind of security deterrent relies on an empty folder being installed off the root and existing?
Yeah. So a vulnerability that could allow local attackers to access or modify files and local attackers, like sitting at the machine while you're at lunch, kind of local attacker. Is that what they mean?
Yeah.
Or just on your network, local attackers.
Maybe it's the network. They probably should have been a little clearer about that. But still, what is it doing?
Yeah, I think it sounds like it was a quick fix, and this is the duct tape while they find a more permanent solution. I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the actual article. In short, it doesn't matter where you use 2S or not. You need to leave this folder alone. Without the folder being present, the mentioned security hole will remain present in Windows 11, offering attackers a potential opportunity to compromise your PC, at least if they are local to the device, meaning they have physical access.
I really now want to quick script across all of my environments.
Mm-hmm.
Which desktops have this folder? I'm not going to do it, but.
I was looking at one of the comments 9 hours ago. I deleted it. No way an empty folder can do anything, LOL. This happened before back in 2016. If it's needed, they will put it back with some files in it. Okay, so it says the INET pub issue specifically affects computers that don't have 2S installed. Installing 2S will open your system to so many more potential vulnerabilities than deleting this folder ever could. What absolutely abhorrent advice. Please do not follow it, Al. As a computer engineer, I say this is bull. No way an empty folder can do anything. In fact, this happened before. He goes, it's the same guy again, but he just posted again. Yeah, this is a head scratcher. Let us create this empty folder in an attempt to prevent anybody from compromising your PC if they have physical access to it. Okay.
Yeah, there's got to be more technical details available for this.
There has to be.
I want to find a KB reference or a CVE or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
And if,
I don't know.
And if any of you are out there actually running the Internet Information Server to host your websites, please do better, because that is a horrible platform.
Yeah, I used it once. And then, I had to use it when I was teaching, because it was part of a server class that we discussed not distributed computing, but when you have two servers doing the same thing. Kind of a load balancing. I think that's what we're
doing. Yeah.
Load balancing. Mm-hmm. And it just provide an example. You have two servers running 2S, and it's kind of a round robin as to which one serves the page when a request is made.
Mm-hmm.
But you change the page on one, and then sometimes you'll get a different page because it came from a different server. So right. That's the last time I used it. Over 10 years ago.
Last time I used it was back when Front Page was a thing. You remember Front Page?
Oh, I've not heard that in eons.
Yep, because in
Front Page. Was that a web development or web page?
Yeah.
Thing?
Yeah. Okay. It was, I forget what it started out as. Microsoft did not develop it like they did with a lot of things. They bought it from another company, mm-hmm. or they bought the company. But yeah, it used all of the extensions, the ASP stuff. And so you could literally build a site in it, and it would just seamlessly connect to like a 2S server, and you could manipulate and upload all that stuff like that. But yeah, that was back during the day where you had Front Page, you had Cold Fusion for website building, and mm-hmm. all this other kind of stuff. Yeah, there was one, I cannot remember the name of it, that I was using for a while. It was a real good WYSIWYG where you could literally just take, like if you wanted a button, you would just drag the button over and put it wherever you wanted it on the page. And what it would do is when it generated the code, it would pad everything out and play and put the placement of everything using these transparent GIF images. And yes, it is pronounced GIF, not GIF. Yeah, motherfuckers. It's yeah, GIF.
I say GIF.
It's GIF.
What's the G stand for?
The guy who created it says that it is pronounced GIF, just like the peanut butter. And as I've told people multiple times, an acronym does not have to follow the pronunciation rules of the words that make it up. Yes, the G stands for graphical. But GIF itself has become a word, not an acronym. And I go by the creator. I mean, if I make something and I say it's pronounced a certain way, by God, that's the way I intended for it to be pronounced. And that's what the creator of the format said. It's pronounced GIF, just like in peanut butter.
You know, it's not often I hear the acronym pronounced. It's been a long time. But in my head, when I read it, it's GIF. Sue me.
I had such high hopes for you.
Hey, at least it's SQL.
Yes. All right. We're good. All right. Someone actually paid for WinRAR. Here's how the company reacted.
That's bullshit.
What?
I bought WinRAR probably 15 or 20 years ago. And I still use that same license to activate. And it goes, thanks for your support.
Wow. Where's your shout out then?
Yeah.
Because this guy, Italian programmer Luca D'Amico,
sure,
paid $25.57. Is that the sterling?
I think it's euros.
Is that euros? Yeah, euros for a license. Proudly announcing it on Twitter. WinRAR, known for its eternal shareware model, allows users to continue using the software even after the trial period expires without enforcing payment. And the company responded humorously to his purchase on Twitter, welcoming him as a full member of the WinRAR family. And despite Windows 11's new native support for compressed file formats, WinRAR remains maintains a steady user base and generates an estimated $15 to $25 million in annual revenue, primarily from business licenses. So this was a personal license. Wow, they still generate $50. Why? I don't. Help me understand. Help me. You are our only hope, Ben. Help me understand. Why would anybody pay for WinRAR? You know what the number one best archiving program is on the planet?
I'm sure you're about to tell me.
7-Zip.
I was going to guess that.
And it's free.
But I'm not. Yeah.
You know, and so why? I mean, 7-Zip will even unzip. It'll open RARs. So.
It'll so well WinRAR.
I was explaining to my daughter the other day, back in the day, talking about compression algorithms and programs. So coming up in my middle teenage years, I was big into bulletin board systems. I even ran a bulletin board system when I was 16. I used the Wildcat BBS 3.x line. And of course, back during the time of the bulletin boards, one of the big things was you would dial into these places and you would look for shareware. And of course, because we were doing this over, if we were lucky, 33.6, I think that's right, 33.6 modems or, mm-hmm. you know, or 24 or whatever.
Was it 28.8?
28.8, I'm sorry. Yeah. 28.8, 33.6. Then we finally got the 56K, which was actually, I believe, 54.6 or something like that. It's a little foggy now. But anyway, of course, because the speed was the slowness that it was, you needed to make sure that these programs you wanted to download, they were as small as possible. And it's funny now because we're talking about files that were 400K, you know, over dial-up, but that would still take a while. You know, now we're talking about I mean, I downloaded WoW the other day, which was over 100 gigs, and I literally watched my firewall peg out at the 1 gigabit capacity that it had on the connection. And I'm like, wow, what a time to be alive. But back in the early days, there was the file format for compression was called ARC. It was a period, A-R-C. A-R-C, ARC. So you had PK-ARC and PK-X-ARC. You had two programs. This was all DOS-based stuff. So PK-ARC would compress, and PK-X-ARC would uncompress or extract. Mm-hmm. Well, the guy that created the ARC was sued by a company called SEA, and they won. They won a judgment against him. I want to say that they won like a $65,000 judgment against him. And keep in mind, this is in the late 80s, early 90s in that time frame. And so it was like, okay, so SEA, and I forget what SEA stood for, Software Something Associates or whatever. But anyway, they were on their high horse. They were like, nope, you know, we have ARC. This is ours. It's our trademark, et cetera, et cetera. So the guy's like, okay. So then he pivots and creates PKZIP and PKUNZIP. And nobody ever heard of SEA ever again. Because once he did that, everybody abandoned ARC and went to ZIP. And then, of course, it's just iterated over the years and the decades. And then you wound up with software like 7-Zip. And of course, WinRAR was in there too, because at the time everybody was competing with, hey, you know, who has the best compression algorithm? We need to get this thing down to like as small as a gnat's ass to be able to get it through on this dial-up internet, you know. So, but yeah, we were sitting there and I got to thinking about it. And I was like, man, that's some history that a lot of the people that are friends of mine probably have never heard of or knew nothing about. You probably had no idea that any of that ever happened, did you?
No, I was not aware of those things at that time.
Yep. Fun times. Well, that's like that's like the evolution of bulletin boards before the internet came in and basically gutted them.
Yeah.
You know, bulletin boards were text. Then we got fancy and we had the ANSI graphics so that you could have colors and all. And then there was a technology called RIP, R-I-P. And bulletin boards started supporting that. And here's the way it worked is you had to have a RIP capable terminal program. And so in essence, kind of like, I'm trying to remember what this would be, almost kind of like the way MMORPGs work today. You know, if you play World of Warcraft, all the assets and everything are literally on your computer. You know, so when you go to move from point A to point B, the server is basically telling your client, hey, you need to move from this coordinate to that coordinate, or all the graphical assets are local to you. They're not being sent to you. It's just there's a stream of code coming to the computer and to the program that says, hey, display this here, display that there, et cetera, et cetera. That's the way
it's just keystrokes.
Yeah, that's the way RIP graphics worked at the time. We went from if you dialed into a bulletin board that was RIP graphic enabled and you used a terminal program that was RIP graphics capable, then it would literally send the terminal program the like code or what have you to put a button here and put a button there and all of that, which then made the experience very much akin to almost like the early days of AOL, that kind of stuff. But a lot of that's been lost now, you know, few Gen Xers, but hardly any millennials and Gen Zers would ever know anything about that kind of stuff. But anywho, next story.
Oh, can I say,
oh, yeah.
I found my receipt when I bought WinRAR.
Oh, really?
Because Gmail.
Oh, yes.
October 11th. 2006.
Wow.
Order number 12223935. That's all. I just wanted to know how it hasn't been 20 years yet.
hey, well, you're a part of that $15 to $20 million annually, I guess, but not as part of the business side.
Yeah, not the enterprise stuff. I love it because I bought it once. I don't feel bad.
Yeah.
Because I did pay money, but I only had to buy it once.
But where
I didn't have to subscribe.
Where do you use it at?
Honestly, I can't say whether I've got WinRAR installed on my machine right now. But when I do, I have a license and it's not going to bother me every time I open it.
It's not good.
I think it was $30.
It's not going to bother me
years ago.
Because I'm not going to use it.
I've recovered from my purges.
You might have. Yeah, you might have. Oh, God.
Okay. OpenAI updates ChatGPT to reference your past chats. This is an update or article from TechCrunch. OpenAI has announced a new memory feature for ChatGPT that will allow the chatbot to remember and reference previous conversations with users, making interactions more personalized and contextual. Honestly, I thought they already did that.
Yeah, me too.
The feature will initially roll out to ChatGPT Pro and Plus subscribers, except for those in certain European regions due to regulatory requirements. Sorry, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Users can opt out of this feature and manage their saved memories through ChatGPT's settings. The update will enhance text, voice, and image generation capabilities by maintaining conversational context, similar to Google's Gemini memory feature released in February. Now, sometime last year, I was explaining to ChatGPT that I wanted to build some kind of monitoring or some kind of software platform I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few days later, I was talking about something else that was, and it was probably related, but I never mentioned that project, but it did. It said, since you've shown an interest in building blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, that's cool. But now I see months later that they've added that feature. I think, they added it before.
They're
just coming out of the closet now.
That's what I'm thinking too. That's like earlier today, I asked ChatGPT, let's see. Oh, yeah. So we were talking at lunch and Spike TV came up in the conversation. And I was like, man, I hadn't heard Spike TV in a while. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it's defunct. So I looked it up and it was like, it was basically it was rebranded as Paramount in 2018 and some other changes, et cetera, et cetera. Well, then we somehow or another, we parlayed that over into dog food, cat food and stuff like that. And so I was curious about the farmer's dog stuff. Was it organic? Because what I did is I did a search and I said, give me a list of organic dog food. Well, it was not on the list. So I was like, I asked it, I said, well, what about farmer's dog? And it was like, well, the farmer's dog offers fresh human grade dog food made with real meat and vegetables formulated by veterinarian nutritionists to meet AAFCO standards, but it is not USDA certified organic. And I was like, oh, okay. So it gives me all this stuff. And then at the very bottom, it says, would you like assistance comparing? Would you like assistance comparing these options or finding local retailers in Tifton, Georgia? I said that. Oriana looked at me and she goes, I don't like that.
Oh shit. Yeah.
And she's like, do you have location services enabled? I said, by app. I said, but I think this thing has figured out just in my interacting with it that it knows I live in Tifton, Georgia.
Yeah. It's probably made an assumption.
Yeah. I will.
Do you have a dog?
No.
Oh.
It was a funny thing. You know, we put our grocery list up on the refrigerator and the left-hand side of the list is edible stuff. The right side is like cleaning supplies, shampoo, toothpaste, and stuff like that. Well, Oriana had put up there that she needed some more body wash, some more mouthwash. And what she'll do is we'll notate who it's for. She put it up there and put dash O for Oriana. So it was like body wash dash O, mouthwash dash O, cat food dash cats. And I went, I was like, honey,
just being clear,
who else would the cat food be for? She goes, I just got in the groove. She said, I was writing it and I just kept writing, went dash cats. And then I looked at it and went, I'm a dumbass. But the, yeah, that's what got us on the whole thing is about just cat food and dog food and stuff like that. But no, I do not have a dog. I do not want a dog. I'm not a dog person.
Damn it. I have a dog and I do not want a dog.
My, when we bought this place in 06, the previous owners had dogs, had two, pretty sure they were German shepherds. And the entire backyard was full of damn holes of them digging everywhere. So, yeah, I'm okay with small dogs, little dogs that, you know, you can have in the house. I am 100% against larger dogs being in the house. And I don't like large dogs in particular anyway. That was always a problem that I had going over to Walt's house, is he always had a German Shepherd in the house.
Yeah.
And lovely creatures, don't get me wrong. But when I'm sitting there, I don't need an 80-pound dog trying to get in my lap while I'm trying to watch television. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or that long ass tongue that suddenly now I need to go get it. I need to go take a shower because I've just got slobbered from head to toe. You know, even my clothes are wet. So no, thank you.
Yeah, I like dogs. I just don't like mine.
Okay.
Our dog is damaged goods.
Mm. Of course, we are the house that at one point had about 24 outside cats. So yeah, that got a little.
I'm not a cat. I'm not a cat person.
That got a little out of hand, and I fixed every one of them.
Well, I can bring my dog over.
No, we're fine. We only have two now.
He kills everything.
They're about 14 or 15 years old now, so they're probably not going to last too much longer. Our 15-year-old cat, Tashi, in July, I believe, will have passed away a year ago. Mm. So that was a very sad day. Yeah, that's the one where I actually, when I was burying him, I actually got Tyler on my iPad, put it on the tripod, and use the video chat over Signal so he could be part of the occasion as we put Tashi to rest. Mm. Okay, next up, China unveils GPMI, an HDMI and DisplayPort rival with 192 gigabit per second bandwidth and 480 watts of power delivery. That's what got me on that. The bandwidth, okay, but the power delivery?
Yeah.
So this is from TechSpot. Chinese companies have introduced what they're calling the General Purpose Media Interface, GPMI, which is a new audio and video interface standard that's challenging HDMI and DisplayPort. The standard comes in two variants. You got your Type-C, compatible with USB-C ports, offering 96 gigabit per second bandwidth and 240 watt power delivery, or Type-B, which uses a proprietary connector with 192 gigabit per second bandwidth and 480 watts of power delivery. The standard offers advantages like bidirectional multi-streaming, high-power delivery, and full-chain security. Over 50 Chinese companies, including TCL, HiSilicon, and Huawei, are involved in its development. The technology will be rolled out in phases, starting with home entertainment devices.
But did they ask Walmart if this was okay?
I don't know. I don't know.
What do you think about this, John?
Well, here's what I can tell you. I know the reason why DisplayPort exists. DisplayPort exists for one primary reason. Patents. HDMI has a patent.
Yeah.
And so to put an HDMI port on your device, you have to pay a fee. DisplayPort, yeah, you do not. And I feel like that DisplayPort itself is a superior connector over HDMI. It's got higher bandwidth from what I remember. And look, I'm not a tech specialist when it comes to the differences between HDMI and DisplayPort. And I know there's like HDMI 1.0, 1.1, 1.2. I think there's 1.3 or 1.4. And then DisplayPort's got its own naming scheme.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as long as GPMI is not patented and can just be willy-nilly put on stuff, I'm fine with it. I mean, it's not that It's not that I'm running a, you know, a $2,000 graphics card and I'm trying to drive, you know, 4 6K monitors or anything like that. I mean, I don't have any applications where I need 192 gigabits of bandwidth and 480 watts of power delivery in my video connection. But
well, it is just for audio and video.
It seems
like something like this with this much bandwidth could be used for data transfers and
Think about it.
All that. So if you chain them,
yeah,
you can use that bandwidth and power across the chain. And then you'd need something that approaches that bandwidth and power requirement.
I mean, if you can already take USB-C, whichever version, I forget the nomenclature, but you know, USB-C can do video if it's the right USB-C. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and you can do 10 gigabit. You can get a USB-C external 10 gigabit NIC. It can do that. So I can see more applications for this than just audio, video, and power. I'm kind of with you. Maybe, what about data transfer? Just networking.
Yeah. It says full chain security. I assume that's a chain of devices on a port. Or is that, am I completely reading that wrong?
I don't know. I don't know if it's that or if it has something to do with the security they put in, like HDMI, where it's difficult to record because of some kind of weird encryption that they put on it and it has to be able to decrypt. I honestly don't know about that. I don't know what they mean by that. But, you know, of course it's going to be the Chinese doing it because we can't do shit like this anymore.
Yeah, whatever happened to the IEEE?
I think Doge defunded them. I know it's an international technical specification board, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's an institute, but, you know, they've developed a standard for pretty much everything we touch.
Yeah, I mean, the Trump administration probably pulled us out.
you're on a roll.
That's the hill I shall die on.
It's the hill you shall roll down.
Yeah, probably.
But in my opinion, I'm still battling when I order a new PC. I'm still trying to figure out before I order it which fucking cables I'm going to need and which inputs on the display I'm going to need.
Mm-hmm.
Just fucking pick one.
Yeah.
And you know what's odd? Raspberry Pi. Video output is HDMI.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be a little bit cheaper if they would have used a display port?
You would think so. I mean,
and they had to pay the USB consortium too.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they just factored that in. I know there's little mini PCs, those B-Links. Mm-hmm. The particular model that I'd been buying had, they would come with one HDMI and one display port. So that also, I was kind of like you. I had to make sure, okay, the monitors I'm getting, the monitors are about $100 each, top out at about $120 most of the time. And they usually only have they have dual HDMIs on them. There's a particular model that we started getting for another client that actually comes with VGA, DVI, DisplayPort, and HDMI. And the monitors are still only about $140 each for 24-inch monitors. It's not bad. Hmm. But anyway, so I'd have to make sure that I would get the DisplayPort HDMI adapter so that I could adapt. Well, now B-Link's new line of mini PCs are all coming with HDMI, two HDMI ports on them. I don't know why they got rid of the DisplayPort, but...
Maybe efficiency in manufacturing?
I guess. And I did run into an issue on one of the mini PCs. The display, I bought an Intel version of it. This was a difference between a Ryzen and an Intel. The Ryzen's, I just used the standard display port to HDMI adapter. Cost like $7, I think. I got an Intel version because this was for a medical facility, and because of their x-rays and all of that, it was like, hey, you need to make sure you're using Intel USB chipset and all of that. So I got the Intel version of it. That display port required an active converter. It would not work with the standard passive. And I have no idea why. We kept trying to hook that thing up and it just wouldn't hook up. And finally I started looking, I'm like, do I need an active one? And of course, the active ones are like $20 or $30. Got it, hooked it up. Bam, Bob's your uncle. And I'm like, well, I don't want to buy these anymore. That's stupid. What happened to the pass-through? All right.
I don't know. Did you skip one?
Did I?
Yeah, Mark Cuban backs Skylight.
Oh, yeah, I guess I did. Well, then you can take that
one. This is from TechCrunch. Mark Cuban backs Skylight, a TikTok alternative built on Blue Sky's underlying technology. And I'm not going to be able to say much about this because I know absolutely fuck all about TikTok or Blue Sky or the AT protocol. But Skylight, a new TikTok alternative backed by Mark Cuban, is launching its mobile app just after 10 weeks of development. The app is built on the AT protocol, or AT Proto, the same technology powering Blue Sky, which means it can tap into Blue Sky's network of over 33.8 million users. Co-founders Tori White, and the CEO, and Reed Armeyer, the CTO, created Skylight in response to potential TikTok bans, offering features like video editing, commenting, liking, and sharing. The app supports 3-minute video uploads and plans to add features like sounds, duets, stitching, bookmarks, and playlists. You know, the things we really need.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all the stuff you can do in TikTok. Unfortunately, Sam, who is our TikTok aficionado, is not here this evening.
White, a former travel influencer turned self-taught developer. I think I'm reading that as a vibe coding.
Probably.
Has been documenting the app's development on TikTok, building a following of nearly 50,000 potential users. And just as a personal take, you can count on literally zero hands the number of fucks I give about any of this.
Hey, I sent this one into the system back on April 7th, so cut me some slack here, okay?
Hey, I'm not bashing you. I'm just, it's like OpenAI's social media initiative.
Yeah.
They're going to ban TikTok. Let's make a new one. How old is TikTok, by the way?
Well, it started out as Musical.ly back around mid 2015. What do we call that era from 2011 to 2010? Anyway, it started out as Musical.ly, and then they bought it or something. I don't remember. And the next thing I know, around 2017, 18, somewhere in there, TikTok suddenly was like the new hotness.
So around 10 years now.
Yeah, let's say.
And so the Skylight is 10 weeks old. Okay. Yeah, I guess if that's how they want to spend their time.
The only thing
a travel influencer.
Yeah, turned self-taught developer.
When I go to a dinner party and somebody asks me what I do, I always try to think up some shit. I never go to dinner parties.
Yeah, me either.
This question has never been asked. But I always imagine myself at a party and somebody, we get to talking and, so what do you do? I always try to think of like, what would I say? Cause I don't want to talk about IT.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while I think of something crazy to say, like I'm an Olympic athlete or a pilot. I'm a commercial pilot. Some dumb shit that I could never talk about just to throw them off. So we talk about what they do instead of what I do.
I mean,
but a travel influencer would be, like the bullshittiest sounding kind of occupation.
Now, what you need to do is, if you're ever in a situation like that, and I was like, well, what do you do? Well, I can't really talk about it. Yeah. Just leave it at that.
Yeah, I have a client with a little sign on his desk that says, the secrecy of my job prevents me from knowing what I'm doing.
I like it. I like it. Hell, I feel like that on a daily basis.
Yeah. The people think we have all the secrets. We're just looking for all the answers.
Yeah. Google and now ChatGPT is your friend in IT. Mm. Maybe there's something to this AT proto. Mastodon's built on something else. but it's one of these protocols that are kind of like, it's like in the open, nobody owns it. So everybody can use it. And so if you, you know, like if you build your apps and services on top of it, nobody's going to be able to come in and go, well, you owe us money because that's, you know, that's patented or something like that. So
yeah, I've been using unlicensed HTTP license. Yeah, open standard. Yeah.
Yeah, open standard. Oh, wouldn't that be something? You had to catalog the number of requests that you make and submit an invoice every month.
Like I just need like a thousandth of a penny per HTTP request.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That'd be a deal for Mr. Wonderful.
Who's Mr. Wonderful?
He's the bald guy on the Shark Tank. I can't remember his name.
Oh, that asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That fucking guy.
Well, I don't like him because, well, anyway, he thinks the economy is doing great.
Of course he does. He's got to sell it.
Yeah, I did know his name. I can't think of it now. Oh, well.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter because we're at the end of the show. And anybody still listening, the one person that's probably still listening is like, thank God.
Well, congratulations. You've made it to the end.
You've made it to the end, my friends. Okay.
And if you're paying enough, you get to hear the post show.
Yeah, the post show show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to look. I got to look. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. And as Ben alluded to, we do have a supporters, members only, that we do what I call the After Dark, which is basically parts that I take out, usually from the beginning, sometimes a little bit of it from the end. But we're approaching we're actually after 8 o'clock now because, well, Ben was late. He had something to do.
Fucking kids.
Yeah, I know, right? Don't have kids.
Well, if you can have kids, just don't let them play soccer.
We got lucky because I think both the boys tried out T-ball and did like peewee soccer, mm-hmm. but that was it. And they were like one season of that. And they were like, yeah, no, give us tech. We want to do stuff with technology. It's like, you know, screw this outdoor sports crap. You know, we get enough outdoor by doing yard work. And we were like, okay. So anyway, you'll find all the episodes at southgeeknews.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, go to voicecast.app/SGN. That is voicecast.app/SGN. You can send an email. The email is southgeeknews@gmail.com. And of course, we don't have Sam with us, but always go over and check out his stuff at tscn.tv. Yeah, at the bottom of the last episode, it says where to find us. Southgeeknews.com, leave a voicemail at Voicecast. Donovan, here's my socials. Sam, his socials. And Ben, ? Unplugged as always.
I'm not unplugged. I just, I don't want to talk to you.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, I didn't come up with that. I actually asked ChatGPT to summarize the transcript, and it came up with that at the bottom. It says, where to find us? And it put Ben, ? Unplugged as always. So you can take that up with ChatGPT.
I'll have to have a conversation.
Exactly. All right. Well, we should be back in about 2 weeks. We might have, Samuel Lewis with us then. We'll have to see. But until next time, y'all just stay geeky, stay techie, whatever. Just make sure your iNet pub folder is in your root in your Windows 11. If you deleted it, you probably should recreate it.
By enabling 2S, you can't just create the folder. You gotta enable 2S to do it.
You know, I don't think 2S is something you can enable on the home versions. I think it's only on the pro versions and enterprise versions.
If you deleted iNet Pub on a home Windows 11 home, you're fucked. Just reload it.
Just reload it
and patch it again. How about that?
Matter of fact, if it reload it, but reload it with Windows 10, an operating system that's actually worth a damn, even though it's not going to be supported after October of this year. Anyway. All right, let's get out of here. I'm now delirious and I'm ready to go. So until next time, y'all take care and we'll see you later. Bye. This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting tiftonmediaworks.com.